Are you looking for food truck books to read, but you're starting to feel overwhelmed with all the content? Or maybe you're trying to find answers to your questions, but you realize you haven't asked the right questions to get those answers. Well, you're in luck. I wrote the book, Before You Launch a Food Truck, 8 Questions Every Aspiring Food Trucker Should Ask. For the past 5 years, I have been studying the food truck industry and been a diehard food truck customer. And in the process of that, I've learned a lot about what makes a good food truck stand out among the rest. I took 8 of those key concepts and created a book where I could have curbside conversations with each of you about them. What makes this book different is not only that it's digestible and designed to not overwhelm you, but it also propels you into action. You can purchase Before You Launch a Food Truck today at thefoodtruckscholar.com/shop in paperback and ebook format, as well as on Amazon. For every copy purchased, I'm donating a copy to organizations committed to helping formerly incarcerated individuals re-enter society, particularly those that are interested in starting their own food business. So, buy a copy today to help yourself and someone else get rolling and keep trucking. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Food Truck Scholar Podcast. I'm your host, Ariel D. Smith, and I appreciate you for choosing to kick it with me for yet another episode. Today, we have a special guest on the show, attorney Eric Guster, founding attorney of the Guster Law Firm in Birmingham, Alabama. Eric is well known for his commitment to educating the masses, and this episode was actually birthed from one of those moments. Now, there's been some recent tension in Birmingham between food truck owners, brick and mortar restaurants, and property owners and lot owners. You know, sounds pretty familiar when we talk about the food truck industry, doesn't it? Well, Eric Guster found himself a part of it, but is using the moment as an opportunity to educate food truckers on how to be prepared, as well as build and maintain healthy relationships with brick and mortar owners and property owners. Because at the end of the day, we want to see all businesses grow. So for now, sit back, relax, and pull out some pen and paper. The show starts now. So everyone, I am very excited to have attorney Eric Guster to the show. Thank you so much for being a part of the Food Truck Scholar Podcast today.
Oh, I appreciate being invited.
Hey, I love providing resources to my listeners because I'm not their only voice and I'm not the only authority on knowledge. So I like bringing in people who are smarter than me so that we can share the knowledge. And I think it's very fitting to have you on the show, Eric, because this whole food truck versus brick and mortar thing is nothing new. It's been going on for quite some time. And as we're talking in the Birmingham context, it's been going on since 2012. And so, you know, you kind of found yourself in an interesting situation with it. But I want to talk about food trucks, permits, or the lack of permits, and the challenges that they have with making sure that they have an agreement with the people who own the parking lots and the property that they're in, and how that can get a little messy. So would you mind just providing some context with what you've been experiencing is in Birmingham now as a property owner in the Five Points West area, and just what's going on with that scene right now?
There are food trucks who are operating in this parking lot that was shared between a building I recently purchased and an Applebee's. The city of Birmingham owned that entire parking lot, including the property where Applebee's is, for at least 13 years. When I purchased the property, I was asked, did these people have permission to be on the property? And the honest answer is no. And the police went out there to talk to these people and said, hey, you have to move because Eric Custer doesn't want you to be here, which was not totally true. It was presented to the city council that Applebee's did not want these food trucks there, which, and that they need to find the property owner, the new property owner, who was me, for allowing the nuisance to occur. Zoning called me and said, you're allowing this nuisance to occur. Applebee's doesn't want them there. Are you saying you want them there? Like, no, if Applebee's don't want them there, then they probably shouldn't be there. The reality was, Applebee's already gave these food trucks permission, which put me in a bad place because we're going to start construction in 2 or 3 weeks. So I didn't care whether they were there or not, because once you start construction, then they just can't be there because you have to fence off the area. But it was definitely kind of a political battle that I was brought into that I was really unaware of what was really going on. So it's very important for the food trucks to have written permission from whomever owns the property that they can be there. That way, whenever something like that comes up, they have written documentation that says this is okay. And if property changes hands, for example, with the property that I purchased, I mean, there, from what I understand, there are multiple food trucks who have been there. I did not know who specifically was there before or not. And if you know property changes hands, you need to find out who their property owner is, reach out to that person, and get an agreement with that person to be there. And that way, everything is legal. One of the problems that we have, especially in our culture, we do verbal agreements and we think everything is fine. But when you deal with the law, when you deal with neighborhood associations complaining, when you deal with neighborhood presidents going to council, like in this particular situation, you need to have all of your documents in order so that when they walk up to you, you're covered. And I guess I gave the long answer to your question, but we have to make sure that you have everything in writing so your tail is covered whenever someone walks up to you.
No, that's not a long answer at all. That's the needed answer that needs to be happening. So with Birmingham specifically, as I said, this has been a long argument, you know, that unfortunately you was dragged into. But we can go as far back as 2012 when food trucks really started to pop up more in Birmingham. And so in 2013, we start seeing one of the first issues of city ordinances by the city council. And if you go back through the news from AL.com, from the Birmingham City Council, you can actually pull up those ordinances and you can also see the conversations and the heated debates that existed about how these food trucks were ordinanced, where they could and could not be. And more recently, the frustration has existed with the tiered structure regarding the permits. So if you are operating in Birmingham, I want to make sure I got the numbers right. I believe the permit is $300. But if you want to be in the city center, where they call a premier permit, it goes up to $500. And a lot of food truck owners were not happy about that because they're saying, well, who doesn't want to be downtown? That's where the people are at. Like, why would we not want to be there? Why are we being charged to exist? A similar situation happened with Ross Bridge and Dreamcakes that was in the hotel area that they have, and they didn't want the food trucks there. And it became a battle between the HOA, the food trucks, and this whole space. So what we're seeing, though, is that some food trucks don't necessarily have all their paperwork in order. And that has been the thing that you have been stressing the most in your Facebook Live conversations, is make sure that you have your business license. Make sure that you have your licensing for each city that you operate in. Can you stress the importance of making sure that you have a business license in every city that you're operating in and not just your main one, quote unquote?
In whatever business you're in, you're going to have fights. As I was growing my law firm, I had lawyers who were attacking me, judges who were jealous of me, and that's just the nature of business. So when you start your food truck business, you may need to make sure you have all of your documents in order. So when the old crotchety HOA lady who has nothing to do but give you hell is going to come after you, you have your stuff in order. That includes having a business license for every single city you do work in. If you go to Helena for one day for a food truck festival, you need to have a business license. If you go to Bessemer for one day for the Bartlett Park Food Truck Festival, you need to have your license. Sometimes festivals have waivers from their cities, but more than likely not, because cities need money. They need funding, and they get it through licenses and taxes. So they want you to pay the licensing fees. Make sure that your information with the health department is up to date. Make sure that your truck is up to par, or your card is up to par. That way, whenever someone comes at you, because there's always going to be somebody unhappy that you're there, whether it's a brick and mortar or the old man or the old lady who ain't got nothing to do but pick on people, but make sure that your stuff is there so when they come at you, you have all of your documents together and they can only just nag. And they'll be okay. But that way you're protected, your business is protected, your employees are protected, and all of your hard-earned money, time, blood, sweat, and tears in that business, those things are protected as well.
And just to hit that home, if you're there in Helena for one day, you need a license. Here's what they're actually talking about. So you're going to have your annual license, y'all, that you'll have to pay for. And there's, based upon your revenue, it is going to determine like how much you may have. There is a tiered system. If you want to know exactly what your permit may cost, and if you're in Birmingham, now you have to do this for each city that you're in. But for this conversation, I'm specifically talking about Birmingham, Alabama. If you go to the BirminghamCityCouncil.org, at the top in the menu item right next to newsroom, there's a tab that says legislation. You scroll almost all the way to the bottom. The second to last one, it will say Food Truck Ordinance 14-126, an ordinance to establish regulations for mobile food vehicles and push carts in the city of Birmingham, Alabama. You pull that up. It will tell you the mobile food service vendors, what your gross annual receipts would be for the next preceding year. If it's less than $5,000, how much that permit will be, all the way up to $90,000, but less than $100,000, how much it will be. Anything beyond that shall be paid in the amount of $720 plus 0.2% on all gross receipts in excess of $100,000. So that's for your annual. But they're also going to talk about temporary licenses. And this is what you will need if you're going to be in somewhere like Helena or Bessemer, whatever the case may be, for a day or a couple of days. You want to pay attention to section 2 that says mobile food services temporary vendors. And it says a mobile food service temporary vendor may, in lieu of purchasing an annual mobile food services business license, purchase a mobile food services temporary vendor license for temporary events. Each event requires a separate license, and the mobile food service temporary vendor shall be limited to no more than 4 mobile food services temporary vendor licenses for each temporary event per calendar year. And they have the breakdown for how much they will cost. This is a situation that I've seen in quite a few cities. So Birmingham is not unique to this problem, but I'm pulling Birmingham as a prime example in light of recent events. And I'm telling you where the resources are, since I am a Birmingham native. Now, for me, Eric, one of the other concerns is the commissaries. Or one of the conversations have been where the commissaries are. And I know we had a conversation. I realized that one of the commissaries I mentioned, the annex, has closed. But we're also having this issue of there not really being a whole lot of them. And also that many food truck owners, they're having to build relationships with brick and mortars so they can use their kitchens as commissaries.
Yeah. One thing in building businesses and things that are emerging, like food trucks are really emerging. It's a newer concept. We've all known Travis been selling for 100 years, it feels like. But you have those food trucks, the food truck industry, the actual industry is really emerging into fancy foods, not just burgers and dogs and slaughter. It's emerging into really fancy cuisine. So, and the food trucks have really become very, very innovative in their equipment usage and what they have the ability to do. And one of the things that we have to catch up on as a small to medium-sized city is the infrastructure to support that growth. And me learning much more about commissaries in the last 2 weeks, it's been very interesting to see that there are very few places that food trucks can go and use as a commissary, which that is a business that I'm actually investigating to see if it's something that I may decide to get into. Because we have to make sure that our folks in Birmingham are not pigeonholed into unfair agreements because there are very few things available. When you have very few resources and very few spaces, then people can kind of start charging whatever they want to charge. Or they may mistreat you, or they may tell you that your only slots are 3 to 4 a.m. instead of the premier 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. slot to use a commissary. So we have to get into researching and investing into those things to make it more affordable, make it more accessible for the people who want to use them.
Absolutely. And so I lived in Nashville for a year, and at the time, Nashville had 4 commissary kitchens, and they're probably expanding even more since then. Just got through doing an interview with the Columbus Mobile Food Truck Association and their mobile food conference. And they have some state-of-the-art commissaries that are not only function as commissaries, but they also function as classrooms for them to provide resources and information to current and aspiring food truck owners. There's actually a model in Kentucky that is geared towards supporting those who are people of color, more specifically Black folks who are into the food truck industry, by making it more affordable. So there are models that are starting to emerge from that. The challenge is that, yes, it's most definitely an emerging industry. We know that food trucks, by the close of 2017, they were a $2.7 billion industry. They've grown 300% in the past 3 years, from like 2014 to 2017. Their growth is outpacing that of the restaurant brick and mortar industry. Before COVID, that was the expectation, even before then, and most definitely past COVID and in the middle of COVID, that has definitely proven to be true. In the space where food trucks are curbside, they're online, they're socially distanced in many cases by their nature and by their build. What has not been as in place, rather, was all of the things needed to sustain the industry. Birmingham, I don't really think, fully understood what the food truck movement was when they first passed the laws in 2012 and 2013. And then we started to see an update from that. And I'm pretty sure you probably already have them, but I'm happy to share them with you as I pull them up. The different ordinances that they passed. So they've had one in 2013. It was a long, drawn out battle. 2017 comes around, they update the information a little bit, and then 2019, we start seeing more conversations about it as well. And that gets more into your tiers about how much this is going to cost the city center, how much that would be to be there, the different zoning that occurred with food trucks. And I think what has helped other cities is that they have had people who are very familiar with both the food truck industry and the restaurant industry, the permits, the ordinances, like all of those different type of things. And they were advocates in terms of like parking that was both advantageous to the food truck owners and the brick and mortars. Because ultimately, what we need to be thinking about is the fact that these food truck owners are potential brick and mortar restaurants.
Right. And with them being potential brick and mortar restaurants, you have to cultivate them in business mindset. Part of the struggle of entrepreneurship, especially with our generations, your half generation or whole generation under me, many of us are first-time business owners. And a lot of us, when you start a business, you're trying to figure it out. You're trying to survive. You're trying to do your thing. And you're trying to figure it out. So we need those types of information generators like your podcast, where you are giving information to people who our counterparts can sit at the dining room table with granddaddy who's had a restaurant for 100 years and passing down this information. So we have to do a better job of disseminating information to each other, sharing resources, sharing horror stories, which I love talking about my business horror stories that I've had or bad times I've had or bad decisions I've had, because there's no reason for you to make the same bad decision that I made. So we have to be mindful of, we have to be proactive in sharing information and not being afraid to share information because we fear that someone else is going to become bigger than us or better than us. And we have to do a better job of that.
I agree with that 110%. So I want to go a little bit deeper in the documentation, because you're right. Many of us are people of like, well, your word is your bond, but the word don't just hold up in court. You got to have some paper.
No, work. People forget by mistake. Some people forget on purpose. Some people will just blatantly lie. And people get fired. People die. That is why when you have agreements with people, they need to be in writing. Everyone needs to sign it. It needs to be dated. Dates are important. Signatures are important, because that shows that on October 2nd of 2020, we agreed that I will be able to use this lot for the next 12 months, and I'm going to pay you $50 a day to use this lot, and I have exclusive access to use it. So when March rolls around and something happens, the city rolls up on me saying you shouldn't be here, you have your documentation that says that. And the important part, not only with the city rolling up or those types of issues, but documentation makes sure that everyone understands what's going to happen. You understand your obligation. I understand my obligation. And that way, if someone breaks that agreement, then the other person can choose to cancel the agreement or sue to enforce the agreement. Because documentation is very important, because, of course, you've had conversations with people. You'll say one thing, and they'll swear you said something else. Not on purpose, just they just thought you said something else, or someone misunderstood. That's why you need to have it all in writing. Use very, very simple language in your contract. If you get a lawyer who uses these huge, super educated words, I call it, tell them to dumb that contract down so that everybody who reads it understands it. And that way, when a property owner signs it, he or she totally understands what it means. If a vendor that you're working with signs it, he, she, or they understand exactly what it means. And that way, everyone's on the same page.
I'm grateful that you pointed this point out, and I want to ask a question about it. So a lot of times people don't have lawyers, right? They are, you know, trying to navigate without going to a lawyer because things get expensive and they get expensive fast. But they also don't sometimes know what to ask for. So when we're talking about a contract like this, is this a non-disclosure agreement? Is there a particular name for this type of contract? Or is it just saying, hey, I need a contract between me and Bobby Joe over there? Like, how does that work?
Google is one of the best resources for information. I had a business idea related to food trucks, and I was up for half the night last night Googling. Google if you're thinking about doing, if you have a food truck, you need some type of facility usage agreement. There are different names for them. Go and Google food truck vendor agreement for a festival, food truck vendor agreement, usage agreement for a private property owner. There are a lot of them online for these festivals and different places and homeowner associations. They all have these different agreements online, and then you can get the agreement together in simple language and then type what benefits you. Several points in those types of agreements that most people will want is just like we said, the who, what, when, where, and how. Who's going to be able to use it? When will you be able to use it? What will you be able to use it, and what are you using it for? How will you be able to use it? And what expectations does the property owner have of me and I have of the property owner? Am I going to pay this person money? Am I going to barter and just cut their grass and keep it clean and they let me use their lot? Are they expecting me to give them 5 plates of food once a week because I'm using it? All those things need to be in writing so that there are no mistakes and no misunderstandings. And these agreements are all over the internet. You don't have to necessarily go to the pay here legal website. Just hijack somebody else's, read a few of them, and just put you one together.
And I'm glad that you said that, because there's a lot of things I figured out just by using someone else's as a template.
Grab you a few templates. I went online last night. I was looking at usage agreements, and I found like the Smorgasbord in New York. When I lived in New York, I used to love going to Smorgasbord. Oh, man.
I've always wanted to go.
Best food ever. Smorgasbord in New York, Atlanta Food Truck Park. I don't think theirs was online. But a lot of these agreements are online because the major vendors, they want you to go online, print it, sign it, send them your credit card information, and you're done. So what they do is they put it on their website to eliminate the steps in order to get the business rolling. Mm-hmm. So they put these things online, and I tell people, you know, check online and get a template. See what worked for somebody else, and you may have a lawyer friend to review it. There are some lawyers who may do it and not be horribly expensive because they know that you're ramping it up. I mean, heck, if you have a food truck, barter with some lawyer. You know, say, hey, I ain't got no money for real, but when you have this party, I'll cater it at cost, and you be my lawyer for the next 6 months. Think about ways to give someone something for something in return. I mean, lawyer the people to the smart ones. I've bartered with a lot of people over the years. Painters, construction people. Everybody needs to get a lawyer on their team. So be very creative when it comes to how you utilize the people around you. And utilize your skills. Because whatever type of food preparation skills you have, that is a skill. So barter it as such.
And I can co-sign on that, because there's a lot of things that I am learning now that, all I got to do is just first ask. Like, I think a lot of times we are afraid to reach out and ask, because the first thing that we say is, well, I don't have the money. And that's something that I had to break myself out of. And I'm still working on that, is to be okay saying, hey, I really need your services for X, Y, and Z. Would you be willing to do this if I provide X, Y, and Z for you? And you'll be surprised. People may be more likely to do that, because you never know if that's actually a service they may want anyway over the money in some situations.
Absolutely. And you have to, when you go, don't ask people for stuff for free if you have something you can offer them. Ask them to do something in exchange for something else. will you review this agreement for me? And when you have your Super Bowl party, you're going to have the best wings, dip, and food you've ever tasted. And you just buy the food and I'll cover it. Boom. They'll do it in a heartbeat, a lot of people would. Because we've all been there where we did not have money for certain things, but people who have skills and a skill set, and you have the equipment, and you can show up to this person's party, and they looking big time. They got a whole food truck there, you know, and cost or whatever, or materials, whatever the case may be, whatever you agree on, then everybody wins. So be creative and never be afraid of the no. That is, a lot of people may not realize this, but I was a real estate agent before I was a lawyer, and I've been an entrepreneur since I was 13. And I was never afraid of the no. There are only three answers someone can give you. That's yes, no, and hell no. Just expect the hell no. And if you get something better than the hell no, you won. If you get a no, to me, a no means a maybe. You know, you say, get the H out of here. Oh, just a no? Okay, cool. So I can call back. I can come back and ask you something else in 3 weeks, and you may say yes. So don't be afraid of someone telling you no, because the only definite no you'll get is one that you don't ask.
And also, don't underestimate what you have. I think that's been a huge blessing to me in the past few weeks alone, is that so many times we're so busy focusing on what we don't have that we overestimate what we do have. You know, like, and that's really the message I'm hearing in this part of our conversation, is what do you have? Or as my pastor would say, what's in the house? Like, what do you already have? How can you leverage that and broker a relationship and a partnership with someone that will be mutually beneficial?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, different people have different skill sets. And don't be afraid to look into your toolbox to really examine what you have. There are some people who can't cook. If you can cook, and we can focus and work it out for you. There are some people who can't plant gardens. If you have a green thumb, you can offer someone, hey, I will take care of your garden and get you some flowers to beautify your house if you take care of this legal stuff for me. People may jump at that. The right people would. I have in the past. If you're gonna, and that was the example that I mentioned, if you're searching out a location for your spot, offering the person who owns the location something in return. It could be money. It could be cutting the grass and keeping the lot clean, you know, and some food for their tailgate or something. But make sure you offer something of value to receive something of value, and people will often heavily consider it, even if they say no.
That's a word. That is a word, because the worst they could say is no. Now, I want to pivot and talk about what happens when you got an agreement, but you see a food truck that may park in that area and they didn't get the agreement. And not only do they not have an agreement, they leave the whole area dirty. There's trash everywhere. And now you have people that's in the area saying, I don't like those food trucks being there because they nasty. When in actuality, it may be one or two food trucks. How would you advise other food trucks who have an agreement, who have a relationship with the property owners and with the brick and mortars? How would you navigate that?
I would tell the property owner, this particular food truck is causing an issue. In our culture, we don't like the snitch, right? Mm-hmm. But this is your money. This is your career. This is your investment. Don't let somebody mess up your money. And if you are there and you're doing the right thing, and you would only be a fool to let somebody mess that up. And that's what happens. If a food truck came, they left trash and they left debris and they left a mess, I would take pictures of it. I would let the property owner be aware of it, who they are, I would get photo documentation. And then, through me, I would clean it up for the owner and say, hey, I took care of this for you, but you need to make sure they don't come back. That way, the owner, you don't want to put the owner in a position where he, she, or they have to go clean up for anybody who is there, because that means everybody's guilty. It's kind of like the eight when you were at your with your cousins when you're younger, and one of you did something, but everybody got in trouble.
Yep.
The same scenario. Those food trucks left a mess on my lot. They're not going to say it was a food truck that fried fish. Those food trucks did this. So, you know what? Forget it. I just won't deal with it anymore. Because dealing with property and cleaning up and maintaining property, it's cumbersome. It's a person leaving their house to go clean up somebody else's mess. And none of us wants to clean up anybody's mess, including our children, our spouses, our brothers. But you're talking about somebody who you have no relationship with leaving a mess that probably only has to either go do it or pay someone to do it. And if I had a great relationship or was a good relationship with a property owner and I was a food truck operator, I clean up that. I take pictures and or video, document it, clean it up for them and say, I took care of this, but these are the people you need to reach out to and tell them not to come back.
And
if you have a work relationship with that person, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it covers everybody involved because it also lets them know that you are serious about their agreement and the relationship that you have with them.
It is, because people don't care. People don't take care of their own stuff. And people are wary of letting people use their stuff because people don't take care of stuff. It's just like you don't let your reckless cousin use your car because you know your cousin's reckless.
Facts.
Same thing with property. Same thing with borrowing a lot or parking in a parking lot. If there's trash, we're going to blame everybody for it. And a lot of property owners be like, you know what? Nobody needs to be there. So I'm mad at everybody. And don't put yourself in that position. And put yourself in a position of trust with that property owner, because if some property is not being utilized, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, more than likely. So that property owner would really prefer not having to deal with cleaning up, not having to hire somebody to go up there and pick up trash. The property owner definitely is not going to go over there him or herself to do it. So if that's you and you're the point person, man, this person really took care of my property. I'm going to really look out for this person. They did the right thing. They protected my investment, and they're protecting theirs. So this is the person I'll probably likely go with going forward. And they will begin to trust you more. And that's how you build true relationships in business.
And, you know, business is all about relationships. I feel like every space is about relationships. But when it comes down to business, relationships, relationships, relationships. You was in real estate, so you know, location, location, location. But here, relationships, relationships, relationships. And not just verbal relationships, but those written relationships matter.
They do.
Yeah.
Written, monetary. Whatever it is, keep your end of the bargain. If you say you're going to clean up, clean up. Make sure that you, one thing I didn't say earlier was make sure you leave that property in better condition than you found it. If you're parked somewhere, make sure that if your customers throw down the containers, pick it up. Leave that location looking like nobody has been there except somebody to clean up. And so when that property owner or their granddaughter or nephew or employee drives by, they say, man, you said somebody used your property. Sure don't look like it. That's the way you want it. Doesn't look like anybody's ever been there. And you have to keep that relationship going.
I'll add one last thing to it, and that is also if you're in an area, and this applies anywhere. If you're in an area and you know there's a lot of brick and mortars, like boutique shops, right? and your line, mm-hmm. and a lot of people love coming to your truck, which is great. But if you notice that your line is blocking entrance to these other shops, please make sure that those who are standing in line are not blocking the entrance to those shops, because those shops want to get clientele as well. And I've been in a lot of other cities where they have lines wrapped around just to get to this one spot, but it's blocking entryway to a lot of other shops. And make sure that you're building relationships with those shops as well. You know, is there like some type of discount that, you know, hey, if you go and purchase this from me, go check out this restaurant and make sure you get this, or, you know, get the food from me, go get an alcohol, you know, a beverage or whatever the case may be from here, or maybe go to this store and check them out and support us. But, you know, have some courtesy, build some relationships with all the people that you come in contact with, because you don't want to be so excited about like, yes, I've got these long lines, but you're also blocking the entrance for these other businesses as well. So it's all about, you know, communication and partnerships. I just really wanted to emphasize that, because I've noticed that that has been a thing in other cities that I've visited and that I've lived in. And especially during COVID, where they have people standing outside in lines more often than they usually have been. I've noticed that that's been an issue with other stores as well.
Yeah. And that's a very important point that you made, because it's important that you control your crowd. If your crowd is unruly, your crowd is out of control, that's you. You can't say that's my customers. No, they came for you. Those are your people. So just like you just mentioned, if you have a line that is stretching, get you some of that tape and put it in the parking lot. Buy you one of those little pull tape things for line control, like they have at the airport and the bus station everywhere. Create your crowd control measures, because that is a total reflection of you. Because if the neighbors start raising cane, then your food truck probably will not be there for a very long time. You don't want to give the old folks with nothing else to do but trying to raise hell any ammunition on your food truck and on your business. Because the old folks, they just look at it as a hobby thing. Oh man, folks out here selling barbecue. They don't think about you went, got a loan for this truck that you pay every month, you're paying payroll taxes, you're having to buy the food, prep the food. They're not thinking about that. There's somebody here selling barbecue things. Like these do for a fundraiser in front of the church or something. So they're not really considering the business aspect, and some of them just don't care, but don't give them any ammunition. And crowd control is a big issue. And I would encourage you, if you draw a big crowd, go get some of those line tapes. Dedicate one employee to organizing the line. Just like outside the club, people tell people, line up right here, this is what you're going to do. If you have that kind of crowd, get that one more employee to go and control your crowd. And that way, your business flows better and you have a good flow of how things are going to work.
And, you know, it comes down to organization and having your ducks in a row. And, you know, it could be that busybody older person that ain't got nothing to do, or it could just simply be somebody of any age that don't want you to be successful. They got some type of vendetta, they petty. Even if it ain't just against you, they just see that you're doing something that they're not doing. It could be so many different ways. But ultimately, what has to happen is make sure that your ducks are in a row. I'm going to continue providing as many resources as I can. I have two documents that the Birmingham City Council has passed. They're both marked 2017. But they also got 2014 going on with them as well. So I'm going to provide both so that you can continue to do your due diligence on that and have research and, you know, confirm which one is the most recent. I believe the one that's on their webpage is the most recent. but it also says it was passed in 2014. I also know they have another more extensive document that is out. I will provide links to both of those for those who are in Birmingham. Make sure you take a look at that. Also, make sure that you are in conversation with the health department for Birmingham. That's Jefferson County. But you also want to be in conversation with every county that you are operating in. I know some of you may operate in Shelby County. So by all means, make sure that you have all of your information squared away. Build relationships with people. Google is your friend. Like, the Food Truck Scholar podcast is here, but so is Google. So also make sure that you are Googling. Get examples of what contracts and agreements can look like. Get several of them so you can look and see what each one has and what stands out that's a little different. Tailor it to your needs. Finally, crowd control. Make sure that you are, you know, creating an experience, not just for the people that walk up to your truck, but for the people that pass by and see your truck. And also have relationships with the people whose property that you're on. Make sure that that's always a positive relationship. So I want to thank you so much, Eric Guster, for coming to the show, for sharing your expertise, for taking the time to provide our listeners with resources and actionable steps. For those who may be looking for an attorney and would like to connect with your firm, how can they connect with you?
Guster Law Firm is a personal injury and wrongful death firm. We handle car wrecks, wrongful death cases, and serious injuries. Our website is GusterLawFirm.com, GusterLawFirm.com. And our phone number is 205-581-9777. That's 205-581-9777.
Once again, I just want to say thank you, not just for the things that you've been doing in the past few weeks, but I also want to thank you for always being very vocal about making sure that the people have resources and they have information. For as long as I've been in Birmingham and heard your name, and even since I've been out of Birmingham, you have consistently done that. And I just want to take the time to personally and publicly thank you for that.
Okay, absolutely. That's what I do. I love educating our people, because the more information that we give, the better off we all are, the more successful we all are. That's all of us going up. You know, and we have to do that and do it much more consistently.
Well, look, I'm out of time, but I'm definitely not out of material. Once again, thank you for listening to yet another episode of the Food Truck Scholar podcast. If you're someone in the food truck industry that would like to be on the show, or if you're a food truck foodie who has a recommendation of a food truck I should try, email me at Ariel, that's A-R-I-E-L, at thefoodtruckscholar.com. And make sure that you're following the Food Truck Scholar on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But until next time, I'm Ariel the Food Truck Scholar, signing off and reminding you to eat local, buy local, and support your neighborhood food truck. I'll see you soon.